Welcome to 2023 and to our first episode of the Get Cyber Resilient Show for the year. Remarkably, this is our 121st episode in total. And today, we kick off the new year with a look behind the cyber news headlines. I'm Dan McDermott, your host for today, and I'm joined by our resident cybersecurity experts, Garrett O'Hara and Vin Yuan. Today, we will be looking into a newly formed global ransomware task force comprised of 37 like-minded governments that is being led by Australia. Next, we will dive into how an outage at the Federal Aviation Administration in the US sent the nation into travel chaos and how being cyber resilient is much more than just defending against attacks. Our final deep dive story will be a review into how revenue from ransomware attacks fell by over $300 million in value in 2022. And we'll end with a wrap of the latest breaches and vulnerabilities to make the headlines. Gar and Vin, welcome back to the show and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Fantastic. Well, we kick off this as season 10 and really having a look behind the cyber headlines that have made the news over the break in the last sort of 6 weeks or so. So, Gar, let's kick things off by looking into how the new Australia-led Global Ransomware Task Force kicked off last week.
Yeah, so I think you kind of said it in the intro piece. Got a bunch of governments around the world getting involved in the International Counter-Ransomware Task Force, the ICRTF. And this came out of Biden's work last year, which I'm guessing folks who have no lives will remember, where they... a bunch of government folk got together to talk about the ransomware problem. And this is one of the outcomes. And obviously, we have Claire O'Neill locally as chair of that organization, which I think is an awesome signal of, I suppose, the esteem that Australian talent and the sort of perspective Australia has on ransomware and cyber in general that we have. I think, you know, it's quite a high profile gig for Claire O'Neill. And I'm sure and have no doubt she is up to the task. It'd be interesting to see where this goes. You know, Dan, you mentioned there's 37, you know, countries that are involved, and obviously I'm not going to go through all of the folks who are there. I'm glad to see Ireland was part of the list also, and Australia. But interesting to see countries like Nigeria were there, Bulgaria, India, and also our friends in Estonia. And for those who are interested, there may be a podcast episode that talks about Estonia and their approach to cyber, but I think I've bleated on about that episode too much at this stage. But look, I think the long and the short of this is it's an incredibly exciting global initiative. You know, we talked on the show so much around the way to fight ransomware being collaboration between not just, you know, private sector and the government, but also different countries. You know, this is a crime that has no jurisdiction, no borders, as does most cybercrime. So the only way we'll really ever get this under control and under kind of sort of wraps is that governments will collaborate and work together. And yeah, the working groups that they've put together are also kind of interesting because at the moment you've got the names of the working groups, but I'd love to, you know, see the briefs and, you know, what their remit actually is. So there's five of them: resilience, which is co-led by Lithuania and India, and then you've got disruption, and I've got questions around what does that actually involve, and that's led by Australia, counter illicit finance, and that's led by the UK and Singapore, and public private partnership led by Spain, and then diplomacy is led by Germany. So interesting to see what those working groups kind of do as they go forward.
And Gar, as this starts to unfold and I guess as these groups come together and that, do we have a view of sort of timetable of expectations on what we might actually see come out of it? And therefore, how do we sort of know what success will look like? It's obviously, I think, a great initiative, hits the headlines, makes everybody feel good that, you know, the world's coming together and doing something about, you know, this blight that we've known as ransomware. But how do we know if it's working?
You just have to believe the politicians, Dan. I mean, that really.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's a good one. I think the proof will be in the pudding, and I think we're actually going to talk about this in a story a little bit later. But there's starting to be some reasonable proxies in terms of the money spent or money lost, really, when it comes to ransomware, like what it's costing businesses. And I suppose one of the good metrics that we can measure this by is if we see that number coming down year over year, then, you know, presumably there's some good stuff that's coming, happening in the world of ransomware. Now, what I would say is, how much of that is attributable to this group rather than stuff that would have happened anyway? And, you know, I think some of the things we'll talk about in one of the stories later will maybe point to, you know, a trend that was maybe already happening and a task force that I think is really important, don't get me wrong, but maybe in a good position to kind of ride the wave politically of stuff that will make them look good, despite potentially not having had the, you know, the hand in solving this problem that they may make out to have had. I agree with you, it's retail politics. I don't know about you guys, but yeah, friends are asking about this stuff. They're talking about the bit where they're seeing scams and friends who've been ransomed and businesses they know. This isn't what it was like 3 years ago when we started the pod, where, you know, it was still very much a cyber problem. This is very much a well-known, well-understood front-of-mind problem for many, many businesses, which I'm sure is why we're starting to see the sort of political energy behind it. They know there's votes in it. They know it's important to their funding and the people who donate to them.
And obviously, as you said, ransomware gets the headline, right? And that, but I think that all of these things actually help just, you know, cyber crime and cyber attacks in general, right? It's not necessarily only going to, you know, impact, I guess, ransomware. It should impact other attack types and help in the other areas as well.
Look, potentially, I mean, I suspect this task force will have a fairly narrow scope to ransomware, but I think you're spot on in that there's a bunch of other government bodies that are involved in the broader cyber landscape. And, you know, things like offensive attacks, we're kind of seeing more of that kind of saber rattling, more of that language, more infrastructure being taken down, more of governments actually going after the root cause of this stuff. And, you know, there's many, many task forces that have actually lost track of all the task forces and working groups and bodies that have been spun up to counter and to try and sort of fight the good fight against various kind of parts of the cyber problem. So yeah, look, it'll be interesting to see where this goes. And I absolutely take your point, Dan, around like, how do you measure this? I think that's the interesting one. The good news for me is it's got a task force. It's got that many countries signed up and involved. Maybe the bad news is that some of the countries that aren't there are also the hotbeds of ransomware. So, you know, maybe the task force, it could be really nice and put on some nice canapes and some good champagne and, you know, invite them in and get those cats involved as well.
That's definitely going to be interesting to see. One of the potential measures is a report came out last Friday just around ranking countries in terms of cyber crime and how at risk they are. And the measure that was taken was the number of victims per 100,000 of a population. And Australia, unfortunately, took the sort of illustrious task of coming in fourth place. So room for improvement, obviously. You know, it's sort of seen as the UK at number one stood out with like 450 victims per 100,000 sort of population. So we're well ahead of anybody else. The US, obviously, with the most actual people attacked and impacted, but with such a large population, it was less per sort of 100,000, came in second. Interesting, Canada third and Australia fourth. And we've spoken a lot around, I guess, the notion of sort of Australia being a ripe sort of attack vector. And I think Canada would be similar in terms of prosperity and wealth and, you know, the way that it goes about doing things as an interesting sort of, I guess, comparison as well. But I think it's those type of things that maybe we'll be able to sort of come to the fore and start to show, like, do we see an actual decrease in these numbers? Will we actually see, you know, cybercrime coming down, ransomware reducing in terms of the number of attacks, the impact? Like as you said, we'll talk about the value and that comes through. Will we be able to sort of point to these things as the year goes on to start to say, but, you know, partly the task force, the focus, the resilience that is being put in place by all of these nations starts to have some sort of, you know, accumulative effect over time.
Yeah, I mean, you fundamentally just want the cost of attack to be higher than, you know, the sort of coin that they're making when they do the attacks. It's interesting, as you're talking through that kind of metric of, I think it was attacks per capita, like it starts to, like, I'd have questions about that because I think when you get to a population that's comparatively low compared to, say, the US or, you know, very large countries, and also places where you see this kind of distillation or consolidation into a couple of companies that do private healthcare. As an example, it just takes one attack, and because so many people get caught up in it, that is a metric starts to get a little bit, it's still useful, but is it a good metric to understand? Are we making progress? Because you have one big attack, and all of a sudden, we look really bad because maybe Medibank or Optus happened last year, but actually, if you took those out of it, like a normalized version or whatever the statistical, I was terrible at stats in college, so I've probably used the wrong word there. But if you took those out and looked at the data again, like where would we be without those kind of large attacks? Yeah, but we need some metric, right? You got to start somewhere and start measuring somewhere. So.
And you're right, I think metrics will come and the proof will be in the pudding. One thing I did have, it just came into my mind just then, is if we have this task force and we're thinking 37 countries come together looking to get more countries in, it's almost like putting a bogeyman story to it, right? It's like these ransomware groups, these people out trying to get money, information. There's someone out there now. There is this task force that, you go to sleep, you keep one eye open because you never know what's going to happen, right? What are we going to do to help protect the people from all the countries contributing, right?
Definitely. I'm not going to steal our thunder because there's a quote that I hope we get to a bit later on from one of the US government people that, to your point, Finn, it's going to end up on a t-shirt probably, but it is the bogeyman and, here, we're coming to get you.
Well, definitely one that will be interesting to see how those five working groups, actually what their scope looks like, how they come together, and hopefully we start to see some communication and meaningful outcomes from these task force. But certainly a nice big headline to start the year with. Finn, our next story is looking into what happened at the Aviation Administration in the US that sent air travel into chaos over there.
Yeah, we've all gone through our fair share of traveling woes, right? You get to the airport and your baggage is gone, maybe your flight's delayed or it's been cancelled. And imagine the fallout from having over 10,000 flights and over 1,000 cancelled nationally across the states because of, human error. And that's exactly what happened, Dan. As you mentioned, early in the month, the FAA said a contractor accidentally deleted files off of their notice to air mission system. And what the contractor was trying to do in this case was actually try to fix something, right? They were trying to correct the sync that was out of sync between primary and backup databases. And as a result, this kind of did a big oopsie in this case. I had to look it up. The NOTAM system, the system database was actually taken down. It's a very important system when it comes to air traffic control, because it's a system that alerts pilots, these aircraft pilots, of potential hazards along the flight route. So they might need to kind of go a different route potentially, or at the location where there might be a risk as well that could affect the flight. The key thing here is there hasn't been an indication of a security breach or malicious intent in this case. It's human error again. It's reared its head in again. And this time it is a big oopsie by this poor contractor. And when we look at even what the pod's called, Get Cyber Resilient, we're always focused on attacks, right? Focused on ransomware, phishing, but we know it's not everything. And in this case, due to human error, due to processes, we've seen a lot of these flights be cancelled and essentially being delayed, and it's been having a flow-on effect on passengers and the likes of, and it's been a pretty poor and a poor experience by the FAA and the governments as well.
It's funny, Vin, as you're talking there, and I don't know if it's the same for you guys, when stuff goes wrong these days, I assume cyber first. And I don't know if it's just because we spend so much time talking about it, but if I roll, you go back 10, 15 years ago even, you'd probably think, an IT system crapped itself, somebody kicked a power cable. But now my first instinct is, somebody's attacked, in this case, the FAA. It's such an interesting psychological, and I definitely feel different about it. I don't know if it's the same for you guys.
Yeah, I think that was my first take as well. It was reading through the notes and the preparation, it was where's the attack? Is this a story for that we should be talking about? And then it's of course it is, but it is that thing of so that's what we've become so used to, right? And that, but I mean, you do think about the travel warning system, and we know the extreme sort of weather conditions that the US is going through and stuff at the moment. You know, it's, you know, pretty full on winter at times, right? So you can imagine there'd be lots of airports affected through that at different periods, lots of rerouting of traffic all the time. If you can't do that, the whole system sort of grinds to a halt very quickly. And as you say, all based on, you know, a contractor's human error in terms of updating that database. But the impact, therefore, is so wide. And I think the interesting thing then, Gar, is that whole notion of what does cyber resilience actually mean? I think we're so focused on the defense and the protect and the stop the bad things getting in, that if that's the only thing you're focused on, you're still vulnerable.
Like I totally agree. We had Fergus Brooks on episode, it was 109. I didn't memorize that, by the way. I did look it up before we started. But like Fergus talked about this a lot and, you know, thinking about impact. And I totally agree with you, Dan. We're, as an industry, we're slightly obsessed with the attacks and, you know, what happens if there's a cyber attack. And spot on, Vin. Like you couldn't be more right there. But his comments, and I think he's spot on, is like, we need to think about, obviously we do, but also you need to think about impact and what, you know, what if the bad thing happens, whether it's human error, whether it's a cyber attack, whether it's a natural disaster, any of those things. And he used that expression, which stuck with me, which is the foreseeable maximum loss. And I think psychologically that those words have, you know, power and energy in a way that impact probably doesn't. And highly recommend going back and listening to his episode, by the way. I think it was one of the ones that really hit home with me, just around how we sometimes get the thinking, not wrong, but we could do better in terms of what is important. The other thing, and here I am waving my pen on my, you know, my sort of soapbox here, but the, you know, we talk about a human error and spot on. It was, I think the technical term is oopsie, is what I took from what Finn said. You know, there's probably a contractor somewhere that's feeling really bad about, you know, taking down all of the airplanes in the US. What an amazing story to tell your friends over a beer. I mean, to be fair, you'd almost do it for the for the story. But the comments, and this is coming from the CEOs and many of the large airlines over there, is that actually this isn't, you know, a random thing, that this, well, it, maybe it sort of is, but it's more reflection of lack of investment over ongoing years. And, you know, that's something we see private enterprise and in cyber, where, you know, people are trying to justify budgets when nothing has happened. And that's kind of the point. Nothing's happened because we're spending money to, you know, be cyber resilient. But we see this all the time in governments, and it's heartbreaking where there's this downward pressure, you know, politicians seeing success as not spending money and, you know, gutting programs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then when stuff goes wrong, you know, everyone kind of goes, how did that happen? And well, you need to spend money. You have to spend money. This stuff doesn't just happen magically. You need to spend money on technology, on people. It takes time. And you got to plan for the future. But yeah, anyway, off the soapbox. But yeah, you could see the sort of commentary from the CEOs of, you know, folks like Ed Bastian from Delta Airlines or Scott Kirby from United Airways, clearly calling out that the FAA needs more resources.
Indeed, and not to preempt too much, Gar, but it's a nice prelude into sort of next week's guest as well, and it's all about the preparedness and about what, you know, how do we actually make sure that we are prepared for when this happens, right? And it's not just an attack, but when some sort of cyber resilience issue is occurring, how do you actually react and respond, and how do you have that in place from all systems across the business, and very importantly, from a communication point of view, of telling, being able to communicate with all of your stakeholders under that high stress, high pressure environment that is these times, because when it happens quickly, and all of a sudden there's no time to be thinking about what should we do, second guessing, you know, decision making processes, protocols, communication. If you don't have that in hand and have that well prepared and rehearsed in advance, it gets difficult really quickly.
That's such a good point. I mean, no one knowingly would want to do something bad, right? A lot of time it is them being under the pump and their boss saying this has to be done, and sometimes taking the shortcut to get things done. That's just where the human mind goes. So I will, just before we wrap and move to the next story, I will point us back to the predictions episode. my prediction around social incentivizing. Not to say that this particular case was that, but then you start to see like the potential, right? You know, well, I'll pay you X amount and you do a big oopsie for me and just play like an accident, just planting the seed there.
Vin, it sounds like you're running a book on the side on the predictions episode as to like which one will come true first, and you know, running at $12.50, it sounds like you're in for some value.
Absolutely.
Please gamble responsibly. I think it is, all of those things are interesting. But one of the things in the first story we spoke about was the notion of a ransomware and its value. So our final deep dive story for this episode is to look into a new report that's claimed that revenue from ransomware fell a staggering $300 million in value, or by nearly 60% last year. How come it's dropped off so quickly?
Yeah, I suppose first thing to point to is where the research came from, which is Chainalysis, which they're an organization that does, well, it's kind of in the name, right? Blockchain analysis. Looking at blockchain for compliance reasons, or, you know, if you're looking for fraud, et cetera, they're the go-to company. In the spirit of transparency, my cousin's husband actually works for them. So they seem like a really solid organization doing good work. Anyway, they've basically analyzed the blockchain and looked at addresses that are kind of, I suppose, controlled by or known to be associated with ransomware actors and groups. And, you know, by definition, that will be a subset. It's not like Chainalysis knows every single ransomware actor out there and knows exactly where their crypto is going, but it's a pretty good proxy. You know, we were talking a bit earlier on, actually, Dan, about your, you know, how do you measure success? Well, if you forget absolute numbers, I think once we're seeing a trending down of the overall number being paid out to ransomware groups, well, that's probably a good sign. But yeah, essentially they've analyzed the blockchain and looked at the payments and yeah, seeing that kind of drop off year over year. So yeah, it was what, $765 million in 2021, and then that's down to $456 million in 2022. So they're not the only ones been, you know, hit by this tech downturn. You know, everybody, it seems like everyone's getting hit.
And I guess, putting on the cynical hat a little bit, we know that crypto crash has occurred. So the value has actually gone down. So are we seeing less ransomware attacks? Are we seeing less payments? Or is it just that the crypto crash has like impacted at the actual value and bottom line? Or have they done a constant currency analysis as we like to do in business often?
I have no idea what a constant currency analysis is, Dan. Like you're speaking a foreign language to me. So I don't know, but it is one of those weird things where the crash in ransomware prices, and I think we actually talked about this in the pod, didn't we? And when this was happening, that you know, all of a sudden, is it worth it when, you know, the Bitcoin, you know, I feel like it's the obligatory, you know, 1 million lira, but, you know, you've got one, you know, 10 Bitcoins, that was a huge amount. And then, you know, if it drops down or crashes out, then all of a sudden, you know, you've put all this work into something that isn't paying out. You would assume, you know, they've done the SWOT analysis, Dan, they've run it up the flagpole and, you know, understood if it's worth it or not. And, I would assume that, you know, the attackers would, you know, kind of take this stuff into account, but we don't know is the long and the short of it. It's an absolute number, and it's, I suppose, going to be subject to the fluctuations of the cryptocurrency market.
And I definitely do think that it does point towards sort of Vin's point around sort of micropayments, you know, moving into sort of ransomware as well, rather than necessarily going for the big bang all the time, but looking at smaller sort of increments. And I think that, you know, the success that we've seen and we reported on last year around some of the international task force and taking down some of these large sort of ransomware gangs, and that we've seen sort of an evolution of the ransomware as a service industry to being able to provide sort of smaller sort of options available as well. And they've sort of moved to this notion of things like cross-platform attacks, where they can get into multiple systems and move their way laterally around that, harder to detect. but asking for small payments along the way and not necessarily going for that big bang all the time. So there's no doubting that, like, they're looking at, you know, different things like extortionware, right? So, you know, looking at sort of sensitive information and data and sort of, you know, putting a value onto that on a maybe a smaller subset of the of a total sort of data set that they may have. So there's no doubting that we're seeing the ransomware as a service industry, if you like, sort of, you know, pivot, as we like to say these days, as I guess challenges have come at the top end of the market, but it's not stopping them, right? So cryptocurrency crashes, big organizations not necessarily paying, you know, the backlash against them and the target that they've got on their back from international sort of crime, you know, task forces and so forth, is meaning that they're not necessarily going away, but it's getting harder, and then having to do, you know, new things, and they continue to innovate and look at new ways to sort of penetrate as well. So I definitely feel as though all of those things combined are creating this constant flux and change in I guess the threat sort of vectors and outlook as well of what might happen.
Definitely. I wonder, are we going to see it like vinyl in music, where, you know, the attackers are going to go back to duffel bags of money and drop points? I mean, that's going to be an exciting time if we get there.
Well, ransomware on a floppy disk, you know, where it all started.
Now you're
not sure anybody would know how to use it to get caught out.
Yeah, you'd be in a lot of trouble, wouldn't you, trying to distribute ransomware on a floppy these days. But yeah, look, all joking aside, you know, the future of crypto, like, where does that go in terms of, you get to the point where there's regulation on crypto, you know, as a currency, the ownership thereof, and some of the legislation that's come through in the US already, where, I mean, I think for a long time, you basically, you in theory, weren't allowed to pay sanctioned organizations or ransomware groups if they were attackers. You know, I say in theory, and I'm doing the bunny quotes and on camera, but there's strong suspicion that in the background, businesses were, you know, paying ransoms, getting keys to decrypt and onward and upward. But they're saying that they will be like civil penalties and they'll go after organizations that are doing that now. So I think there's a little bit of hard medicine for some organizations where, and, you know, again, easy to say, don't pay the ransom. And then if you're in the situation where people are going to lose their jobs and all that stuff, then, you know, the temptation is always there to do it and to do it secretly. But it changes the game. I think if you can actually face civil penalties for doing that. Like, it feels there's a different texture to that if you're going to make a business decision. So yeah, it'll certainly be interesting to see where that goes.
Indeed. Well, again, I think one that sets us up well for the year ahead in terms of looking at what the impact will be and whether we'll continue to see that decline in value of ransomware and the evolution of sort of micropayments and where ransomware as a service continues to evolve to.
Yeah. Definitely.
So finally, let's wrap up with a quick review of the latest breaches and vulnerabilities to make the headlines. The first news item is that the latest update and fallout from the Medibank breach.
So anyone who has obtained quotes from the health insurer agent, which is all of us, right? We all do that thing every year where you go to all different health insurers, punch in your details, just kind of see who gets the best offer. AHM being part of Medibank means that if you actually obtain quotes from AHM, your data is potentially being leaked as well as part of the overall data breach. So there have been, I guess, email notifications to people who have requested these quotes to come through saying, hey, you know, they've leaked things, including your name, gender, their birth address, phone number. And again, it's just, again, asking that question where it's, how long is it, should you be keeping the data for? And I guess, like, from AHM's perspective, if people are generally asking for a quote for their health insurance, you know, you want to keep the details there because, you know, maybe they'll go back at some stage. Maybe you can do some marketing to them as well. Like, from a business perspective, it makes sense to hold on to their details. But again, you can see why if you hold on details, you're also open to being, I guess, going through a security incident and potentially leaking out those information of, I guess, your potential customers.
I think to me the interesting thing here is the continued scope of the breach, right? It keeps expanding. It's like, it's this data set. Oh, it's this one. It's this one. It keeps going. And like you say, Vin, it sort of shows that, you know, if you're storing the data, it's vulnerable to some degree, right? And so they've stored a quoting data and now all of a sudden, maybe and probably weren't looking at that in the first instance of the breach, right? It's not as necessarily not as detailed, not as sensitive as some of the other information. And now as you continue to sort of investigate, it's like, oh, that's been breached as well.
I reckon we're number one on your list next year, Dan, as the scope increases.
You're going to have to fill me in, Garth.
On your list, we came in number four last year or this year in attacked countries. I reckon, you know, as we see this impacting more and more Australians, yeah, we'll per capita will be higher and higher on that list.
Going for gold.
Yeah, we can keep going. Get to the top of the podium, right?
So. There you go. It's the Australian way.
The next headline is the plan from the WA government to create a cybersecurity hazard plan. Gar, what is a hazard plan?
I suppose really in theory, it's probably something that I would have expected existed already. But there you go. I was definitely sort of partly surprised, if I'm honest, when I read this. So it's basically the government over in WA creating a formal emergency response plan when there's a cybersecurity incident, presumably something that's going to, you know, affect the state at a statewide level or something pretty serious or significant. I'll be honest, yeah, I'm just kind of surprised that at this stage in this era, in 2023, this isn't just kind of standard stuff for state planning and national planning, but yeah, it's made the news, so presumably it's not.
Yeah, it, like you say, it sort of is surprising, but I guess it is that thing of formalization of some of these plans, right? And to have that emergency response and to have that official plan in place, you know, at a state level, continues to show, I guess, the escalation of where cyber's at, but also where it's coming from, right? That it wasn't something that was necessarily considered maybe important enough, significant enough, needing the time, resource to have such a response plan in place. But it's interesting that it's now being raised to that sort of level and we're seeing some of these things come to life.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Dan, earlier, you kind of need the plan and need to practice the plan for the plan to mean anything. And I think that's the thing that surprises me because, you know, if a big cyber incident happened in WA, you know, 3 weeks ago, did people know what they were, you know, what they were going to do? That's kind of the worry. But it's, you know, it sort of fits in. You know, I'm looking at a list of some of the designated natural and man-made hazards, and there are things like, you know, terrorist acts, missing persons, rail crashes, heat waves, floods. And yeah, to me, cybersecurity, honestly, 6 years ago, this probably warranted, you know, being included in that list given the impact and the effects. But good to see. I suppose it's a good news story.
Indeed. I think any action, you know, is like you say, to progress towards, you know, having a better cyber resilient future. Finally, CrowdStrike has alerted the cyber world to a tactic being described as bring your own vulnerable driver, or BYOVD. Vin, what is a BYOVD attack entail?
Yes, another acronym in security. You got to love it. So if you think of a driver essentially being that piece of software between your operating system and your device, what this crime group is doing is attempting to deploy a malicious kernel driver, which exploits an existing vulnerability. But at the end of the day, what that does is once it's in, it allows attackers to either execute code or initiate a DDoS attack using those kernel privileges. So when I say kernel, think of like the heart of the operating system. The tricky thing here is the drivers that are used by this particular crime group are actually signed by different certificates that have been stolen from signing authorities like your NVIDIA, so the people that do the gaming stuff, Global Software LLC. So trusted stolen certificates that Windows would just allow through because they trust it, right? Because it's a valid certificate. Now, this is different than what happened in 2021 where Microsoft actually said that any drivers with confirmed security vulnerabilities will be blocked by Windows, right? It's part of a Windows update. You know, it's part of the, I think it's the HVCI, or the Hypervisor Protected Code Integrity. You got to check that box. It should automatically add it to the block list and that shouldn't work. So I guess these threat actors are using these drivers to then go in, disable endpoints, which is great that CrowdStrike were able to pick that up. Because if you're able to disable endpoint security products, then that can limit what the system is doing in terms of looking at potential, you know, detection capabilities, you know, later phases of a persistent attack moving forward. So it's great news that CrowdStrike were able to pick this up and let the world know that, hey, you know, there is a vulnerability at the moment. Everyone should be keeping their eye out for these vulnerable drivers.
Amazing. Certainly something I did not know anything about. And thanks for the education, Vin. And like, as you say, something, a new acronym for us to keep an eye out for in the world of cyber and making sure we're getting on top of.
I can't not say it, guys. Like, basically, BYOVD was the sort of theme of many of the college parties I went back to in my 20s. Yeah, sorry, had to be done. We can edit it out.
Oh, no.
Well, on that note, thank you, Gar and Vin. Do appreciate almost all of your insights in another big news episode today. But who do you have as our special guest for next week?
So next week, Dan, we have Grant Chisnell, and a ferocious guy. So we recorded the interview last week, I think it was. And, you know, one of those ones you just get genuinely excited about putting out there. He's a really energetic guy, really knows what he's doing. And, you know, kind of the real deal in terms of his organization Left of Boom. So it's that idea of like, do all the planning before the bad thing happens, so that when, you know, when it does, you're kind of in a good and better position, obviously, than those organizations who don't. So crisis management and crisis planning is his thing, and he's certainly, yeah, he's got an incredible set of experiences, not just in cyber, by the way, but in other stuff as well. Phenomenal guy, very interesting.
Yeah, fantastic. Really looking forward to that. And Grant is also featuring at our upcoming Mimecast Connect events in late February in Sydney and Melbourne. So if you haven't seen those, check out the Mimecast website and get along if you can. Grant will be a featured speaker and one very much looking forward to hearing. On that note, until next week, if you would like to continue exploring key topics in cybersecurity, please jump onto getcyberresilient.com and check out some of the latest articles, including how the financial service industry are facing fresh cyber threats. Also, a look into cyber insurance. Is it an essential part of your protection or a pointless expense? And a full wrap of the latest threats and news in this month in security, January edition. So thanks for listening, and until next time, stay safe.